Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining me as always. Week 9 of the college football season is in the books. We're going to recap everything that happened this past weekend, stock up, stock down, some prospect talk, whose NFL draft prospects are rising, who are falling. We'll also take a look to week 10 in the tail of the tape, and then we'll always, as always, close out with the NFL rookie report, checking in on those rookies to see how they're performing in their first year in the NFL and some names you should be buying or selling or maybe just holding in your dynasty fantasy football leagues. So with that said, let's get right into it. The first segment of the night, which is the NFL draft report. I'm going to start right at the quarterback position, and I'm going to start with a couple guys who we have not talked about much on here since the summer, and I'm going to start with Duke quarterback Daniel Jones. This is a prospect that is really moving up the, you know, prospective draft board, so to speak, you know, during this season, as we've seen guys like Drew Locke and Jared Stidham kind of fall down, you know, the draft board in terms of, you know, people talking about them, discussing them, mentioning them as first round picks. Daniel Jones has gone the other way. Daniel Jones is a guy who now is who I thought was more of a early day free guy when I watched him in the summer and had some tools, but he had some things he had to clean up on. And now, you know, based on the coaching he's getting there by Cutcliffe, you know, he's a guy who we've heard a lot about for the years with the Manning brothers. And Daniel Jones, he's 6'5", he's 220, his completion percentage has improved this year, he's cut back on his mistakes in terms of interceptions. I mean, this past week, 396 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. What really is impressive about him is, though, he's also, at his size, he's got some athleticism and mobility. I mean, 15 rushes for 38 yards, but, you know, anytime you check out the box score or watch a game on him, you see him making some plays with his legs. You see him buying time in the pocket. I've talked on air a lot about how important it is in today's day and age with the lack of quality O-line play at the NFL level, how important it is to be able to buy some extra time, to move around in the pocket, to fend off some defenders at times. Jones has those characteristics. So when people are saying that they think he's moving up the boards and could be a second round pick, I totally could understand that and buy it based on the need at quarterback at times, based on his play this year, his improvement we're seeing this year, and the lack of improvement or steps back we're seeing from many of the other quarterbacks. I think Jones is squarely on the radar as a guy who's moving up. And listen, if Herbert and Haskins don't end up coming out, who's to say Jones can't take his momentum and carry himself all the way into the first round for a quarterback needy team. I think more likely he's more of a top of the second round type guy. But listen, we've seen quarterbacks get pushed up into round one all the time. So it could happen again. And maybe he just continues to impress this year and teams legitimately think he is a first round talent. So Jones is a guy who, again, has good arm talent. I wouldn't call it great or elite arm talent, but he's got good arm talent. He can make all the NFL pros. He's got that athleticism and ability to move around the pocket. You know, he cerebral wise, very intelligent, very smart from everything you hear and read about the guy. You know, I think it was, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Daniel Jeremiah or somebody was saying that the way he picks up the offense and stuff like that, you know, it's a little bit Manning-like in that regard. So again, when you hear things like that thrown around in terms of his ability to understand an offense, to, you know, read coverages and defenses like that, obviously, you know, your ears perk a little bit like that, but obviously it's much more than, you know, than just being a good study in terms of that stuff. You got to combine everything. And that's where we're starting to see him make improvements in some areas. And it'll be fun to kind of watch him this year, you know, as the season progresses, you know, maybe Duke gets into a bowl game, you know, I'd like to see him against, you know, maybe a better level of competition than sometimes what we see, especially with the ACC being down this year, besides, you know, pretty much, Clemson and NC State. So it's going to be fun to watch him and see how he finishes out this year. Another guy who I talked about in the summer shows was Tyree Jackson out of Buffalo. He's 6'7", 245 pounds. He's another guy, big guy. He's got some ability to move around the pocket a little bit. He actually already played his week 10 game on Tuesday night. He threw for 358 yards and 3 touchdowns. He has 23 touchdowns on the year. Another intriguing talent. And like I said, with so many quarterbacks slipping this year, with other quarterbacks maybe not potentially declaring for the 2019 NFL draft, a guy like Tyree Jackson is intriguing. The size box, you know, the stature box, the arm talent box, some ability to move around the pocket. You know, Jackson's a guy who could intrigue teams. He could be a guy who, you know, is in that deep remix, you know, and potentially shows well in the pre-draft process. So Tyree Jackson is another name to have on your radar. Some other guys who I've talked a lot about here on here. I mentioned last week, Nate Stanley, another poor game this week, 205 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions versus Penn State. And the more I watch him this year over the last couple of weeks, the more I kind of think what I thought about him last year and why I didn't even put him in the scouting notebook is I just didn't see a guy who I thought was a high level NFL caliber prospect. You know, I didn't see a guy, you know, have, you know, the arm talent to make every throw, the willingness to make every single throw. And I just didn't see the level of production that I was kind of hoping for, you know, that, you know, I know some people were higher on him and they thought, you know, he potentially could elevate himself this year to being a first round pick. I don't see it. I don't even think he's a guy who should declare, to be honest with you. Now, maybe down quarterback year, maybe he gets some whispers that he could be a day two pick. Listen, if a team wants to invest a late third round pick or fourth round pick, I think that's the range where you can make a case for any quarterback, depending on what you're looking for, your system and stuff like that. But in terms of just evaluating traits and his game film, I don't see a guy, in my opinion, who warrants to be a first or second round selection. Doesn't mean he won't be. It's just that I'm looking for certain things and I'm just not seeing it. And the last couple, you know, performances by him, to me, I don't know how you're an NFL team and then you invest a first or second round pick on what you've seen. You know, I think it's a little bit different than a guy like Josh Allen, because somebody might say, well, you know, Paul, you thought Josh Allen, you know, warranted a first round pick, and what did he do in college? The difference is that Josh Allen had some rare, rare traits in terms of his arm talent, velocity, strength, his ability to move around the pocket, throw on the run. I mean, those were all elite traits. So I was able to overlook, you know, some of the film and some of the flaws and concerns and say that I think he still warranted to go first round. I'm not seeing any elite traits or even great traits with Nate Stanley. I'm seeing solid traits at times, but you combine solid traits with, you know, below average or mediocre production in big games, I have a hard time saying that guy deserves to be, you know, top 60 pick in the NFL draft. Another guy who I think his stock has to be going down a little bit is Drew Lock, 15 of 27, 165 yards. another guy who could he go on day two? Yeah, he probably will go on day two based on his arm talent, you know, his ability to make every NFL pro. But again, I was hoping to see more consistency and improvement in certain areas this year to warrant a top 10, top 20, late first round pick. I'm not sure I'm seeing them. So I think Drew Lock's stock a little bit hurt right now. We talked last week on the show with Pete about how he's a guy who probably will impress in the pre-draft process. But I think he's pretty much a statue in the pocket. And I have some concerns about guys that don't move around much in the pocket, you know, because I just think you have to be able to maneuver playoff structure. And I haven't seen that much from Locke. And then this year, his production has kind of taken a little bit of a step back from what we were expecting to see. Will Greer played last week on Thursday night against Baylor, 353 yards, 3 touchdowns. Listen, Greer is still sitting there as my third quarterback right now. His ability to play off structure, I like, but there's some concerns there. I mean, decision-making is a big one, too careless with the ball. I mean, NFL teams are not going to tolerate that. So I still think Greer, you know, could he sneak in the back end of round one? Sure, but I think he's probably more of a day two guy as well. But I do like him maybe more than some people do. And I definitely like him a lot more than like guys like Nate Stanley, Brian Lewerke, and guys like that. If I take this over to the running back position, not a lot to talk about the running back position. As Pete and I talked about last week, I think it's a little bit of a stock down at the running back position as a whole in terms of what's going to come out this year and be available. I'll start at a guy we talked about on the show last week, Zach Moss. Watched him a little bit this past weekend, 211 yards and 3 touchdowns. Runs hard, good quickness. Moss is an intriguing guy who, again, he was on my watch list in the summer. Didn't put him in the scouting notebook, but he's a guy who squarely is getting more and more attention right now. The first guy who I think really brought him to attention was Dane Brugler a couple weeks ago when he said he was one of his top, if not the top, one of the top running back prospects, in his opinion, for the 2019 NFL draft. His performances week after week have been really impressive. He's a guy who I think, if he declares, he's only a junior, and he's, you know, only a junior, not a guy who had a lot of fanfare, you know, when he came to college, but, you know, 5'9", 215, good stature, can handle a heavy workload. He might see an opportunity in a little bit of a down year to come out. And I think, you know, he could be a top 100 pick now. I think Dane Brugler went as far as saying top 60. And, you know, Brugler is great at evaluating talent, has ears to the ground as well. So if he's saying that, I think it's definitely possible. So Moss is an intriguing guy who you're going to have to continue to watch because he just wasn't on the radar much when the year started. David Montgomery this past week, 33 touches, 33 carries for 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. You know, Iowa State defensive line, poor. Montgomery, since last year, never going to be a guy who can have a high, you know, yards per carry, which I don't really use at all. I think it's the most meaningless stat in college football and the most meaningless stat to evaluate a player on in terms of his NFL prospects. But I know some do. I don't hold that against Montgomery. I truly don't. The one thing I will say I'm frustrated about with Montgomery is they're just not using him in the pass game enough. And I don't understand why. I think that's one of his calling cards, that he could be an effective receiver out of the backfield. He could be a three down player, you know, that really impacts the game in the receiving end as well. And we're seeing that at the NFL. You know, teams, more and more teams are involving the running back as a staple of the passing game. You know, keep the chains moving, you know, line them up against, you know, linebackers that they have mismatches against. I think Montgomery is that type of player. I just wish we'd get an opportunity to see him utilize that skill set a little bit more this year. And I think at times, you know, maybe because they're giving him such a heavy workload rushing, they don't want to give him more touches, but I do think he can make a big impact in the receiving game. I think that's going to be one of his strengths and his calling cards when he gets to the NFL level. If I take this over to the pass catchers, let's start with the tight ends for a second, because I want to bring up two names who we've mentioned on the show. You know, they were in the scouting notebook, and that's Isaac Nauta and Caden Smith. Isaac Nauta had 5 catches for 73 yards, and anybody who watched that game this past weekend, that Georgia-Florida game, saw Isaac Nauta be a big factor in that game. Now, Nauta was a guy who came to Georgia as like one of the top tight end recruits in the country, had a really strong freshman season. People were talking about him being one of the next great tight end prospects. And then they really didn't use him last year. I think he only had like 9 catches. It, you know, their usage of him, you know, goes up and down. Nauta showed this weekend some of that skill set that we hadn't really seen a lot since that freshman season that makes him an intriguing prospect. I know my co-host, Matt, he has been on the Nauta train for quite some time. He's never really, gotten off of it. I have some concerns about athleticism and creating separation at the catch point, but that was never his strength. That was never his calling card, even when you watched his high school film or his, freshman year film at Georgia. He was a guy like so many tight ends in the NFL that creates enough space at the catch point with his size, his physicality, and enough movement skills, really good ball skills, can go up and high point the ball well. And in this game, you saw some of those things. You even saw a little bit better athleticism than maybe I've even led him to believe. I don't think he's going to be a guy to test well, but he kind of reemerged on the scene a little bit as a guy that, every once in a while this happens where, we become a little bit down on a prospect, but the NFL looks at it a little bit differently. They look at it and understand that Nauta hasn't been asked to carry a heavy workload. I mean, look last year at Ian Thomas. He didn't put up these gaudy stats. He wasn't a major producer in the passing offense there, at Indiana. And then you saw him, still go at the first pick in the fourth round because NFL teams were intrigued by the skill set. Nauta's a really good blocker. He's got some ball skills. He can make high, difficult catches at the catch point. He's a guy who, even though we don't see top-level production, he's a guy that's going to have a future in the NFL, and maybe it's not round one or round two, but maybe he's a round three guy. And I was talking about him in the summer, and I said maybe he's going to be more of a day three guy, a little bit of a later round guy because of those athletic questions. And it's possible that's still the case. But I know this was a really nice week for him to kind of reemerge and show himself a little bit to all those people that maybe have came off the bandwagon or maybe didn't know enough about him if you don't play in those, deeper Devy leagues. And, he was a part of them, for years now. For some people, it might have been like an initial exposure if they don't remember him from his freshman year. Also, Caden Smith at Stanford, 9 catches, 112 yards, and 1 touchdown. Pete and I talked about the tight end group last week. Obviously, it starts at the top with Noah Fant, Albert O from Missouri, intriguing. I threw in the mix Irv Smith Jr. If he comes out, I think he's a guy who can go in the top 50, top 60 picks. But Caden Smith is the next guy for me in that tight end board. He would be number 4 on my list. I could see him as a late second or third round pick. Maybe if he doesn't test out well, he falls into the early part of round 3, but really good ball skills, ability to go up and win at the catch point, uses his body really well. Again, not a guy who's going to create a ton of separation with his quickness and his routes, but does enough to be a really productive NFL player. And we saw, him be super productive this past weekend. So a guy who definitely should be on your radar as a potential top 100 tight end pick. And if not in top 100, probably shortly after in round 4. At the wide receiver position, N'Keal Harry, 4 catches, 95 yards, and a touchdown. Continues to be one of the top wide receivers in the country. Again, when I watch him play, it's hard not to see Dez Bryant, Alshon Jeffrey. I think that's the spectrum that he's in. And I understand, people have some concerns about that type right now, considering we saw so many of the guys last year not be, thought of very highly in the draft process. But there are level of differences in players that win like that. N'Keal Harry, a guy like him, I think is more like the Dez Bryant and the Alshon Jeffries of the world than a guy like a Calvin Benjamin, who maybe last year when we talked about guys like Jalil Scott, and other players in that mold, NFL teams might have saw those athletic limitations, those separation concerns, and didn't see enough of a calling card in something else to warrant them, being Alan Lazard going undrafted, didn't warrant them, going higher in the draft. I think the NFL is going to see N'Keal Harry much more like an Alshon Jeffrey or Dez Bryant type, and I think he'll be, squarely in the mix as a top 50 pick in the NFL draft. Calvin Harmon this week against Syracuse flat out dominated, 11 catches, 247 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's number 2 on my board, and I'd be okay even putting him ahead of A.J. Brown. He might get there, when I go back and really study the film from this year. I think he does a little bit more. I think he's a little bit more versatile to play outside. where I think AJ Brown is more, you know, going to be a slot guy inside, you know, think, you know, Juju Smith type player. Calvin Harmon, I keep saying it. Devontae Adams is the guy that comes to mind. I don't see elite athleticism like on a Julio Jones type level, but I see really solid to good athleticism. I see great ball skills. I see a good route runner. I like a lot of things about Calvin Harmon. I think he's squarely, you know, going to be in the mix as a top five wide receiver in this draft class. A couple other guys, the big guys I keep checking in on, David Sills, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, continue to impress. Sills with 5 catches, 131 yards and 2 touchdowns. Arcega-Whiteside, 10 catches, 115 yards and 2 touchdowns. It's obvious that their stats are going to be there all year. College level defensive backs are having a hard time with these guys. Their combination of ball skills, their size, is just makes them mismatches at the collegiate level. How that translates to the NFL is still to be determined, in my opinion, because like I just said, we talked about some of those other guys that the NFL had concerns about. And I don't think Sills and Arcega-Whiteside are putting up stats that are so much better than guys like Simi Cobbs, Jalil Scott, you know, and Alan Lazard did. So I think the NFL may have some concerns about their athletic limitations. Now maybe they go to the combine and they, you know, they show off and to the point where they could kind of look past that. Possible. So I think that's going to be fun to kind of watch those two guys as well. Also wanted to give a shout out to my guy, Stanley Morgan Jr., another 82 yards and 2 touchdowns this week. I think he's one of the better route runners in the draft class. He's going to be a guy I'm probably banging the table for, you know, all draft process as a guy who should be getting more attention. I think he, you know, warrants, if he doesn't go in the top 100, he should be a guy that goes off the board early on day 3 because of his route running capabilities, his versatility to play inside and play outside. Really like Stanley Morgan's overall game. So with that said, let's transition over to the second segment of the night, and that's the Devy Slant, where we take a look at a few underclassmen from this past week that you should, you know about, have on your radar. Obviously, if you play in Devy leagues, a lot of these guys are guys that have been picked, were highly recruited coming out of high school, but it's kind of always good to just check in on them. I'm going to start with a new name, and that's Eno Benjamin out of Arizona State. He's 5'9", 201 pounds. He's a sophomore this year, so he's not eligible to the 2020 draft class. 185 yards and 2 touchdowns this week, and amazingly, it's not even close to his most impressive game of the year, which when he had a 312-yard game. He's also had 3 games over 100 yards. Really impressive player. He's a guy who's probably going to have like 4.45 speed when he gets to the combine eventually. He's going to be a really intriguing prospect, going to put up gaudy stats probably this year and next year at Arizona State. He's a guy who's got some juice, got some quickness, got some, you know, good moves. Going to be a guy who I think is going to be more of that change of pace type role at the NFL level. I don't think he's a guy who's going to be a workhorse, but the NFL is committees now, basically. There's very few teams that aren't. So Eno Benjamin is a guy who, based on his production, based on his measurements, based on what I think his athletic testing is going to be, I think he's a guy who can have a role at the NFL level, be a part of a backfield, and, you know, probably flying under the radar a little bit. So Eno Benjamin is a guy who you should know, you should have on your radar, you should be following closely, and you should watch some tape on this guy and watch some film on him, because he is a lot of fun to watch. If we talk about some other running backs who obviously we've talked a lot about, DeAndre Swift this past week, 104 yards and a touchdown. The thing that still baffles me though about Swift is the touch usage. He only had 14 touches in the game. Holyfield had 20. I just think that should be flip-flop. I think DeAndre Swift is the type of guy that should be getting 15 carries or so a game and 4 or 5 catches. I think his receiving ability is going to be his elite trait when we're talking about him as an NFL prospect. I think he can be a major, major weapon, you know, almost on the level of like an Alvin Kamara type at the NFL level. And that's how highly I think of Swift's overall game. He's a guy who, again, I think going into next college football season is going to be thought of as a top running back prospect in the 2020 NFL draft, but they still continue. I know that's Georgia's way. Even last year, Sonny Michel, Nick Chubb, they use Swift also. So they like to use 2-3 running backs all the time. I still am waiting for the game where they have to lean on Swift a little bit more to be one of their primary playmakers. They just haven't done it yet. A.J. Dillon, one to make note of. He obviously missed a game a couple weeks ago versus Miami, 149 yards, one touchdown. Again, bruising physical back, got a little bit of juice when he gets into the open field. When I watch A.J. Dillon, I get a little bit of James Conner vibes from when James Conner was at Pittsburgh. Now, I never thought James Conner was going to be as good as he's looked this year. I always thought he was going to be a very solid player, you know, more of a two-down thumper type between the tackles. He has shown a lot more juice this year at the NFL level. He seems to be in the best shape of his career. He's shown more in the receiving game than I thought he ever had. So I'm comparing more Dillon, the prospect, to what I thought of Connor maybe when he was a sophomore, you know, early on in his college career. That's kind of, you know, what I see of him and think of him. So Dillon's a guy, solid prospect. Going to be fun to watch him for another year and a half before he probably declares. We talked to the wide receiver position. Again, I want to bring up T. Higgins' name because six catches, 156 yards, and two touchdowns. I really think he is showing off, and him and Jerry Jeudy are going to be two of my favorite wide receiver prospects entering next college football season. They're going to be at the two, probably both in my top five of top prospects at the position. Really impressive game. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, when Clemson, which I think will definitely be in the playoff, I'm looking forward to see Higgins in the playoff game in a big setting against a top-level competition that we just really haven't seen Clemson go up against this year. If I turn this to the quarterback position, obviously his teammate Trevor Lawrence, another 314 yards, four touchdowns. I mean, this guy just does not look like a freshman. Every game I watch of him, I walk away in awe that this kid's a true freshman, going to be a flat-out superstar. And then obviously Jake Fromm, wanted to talk about him. He had a little bit of a down week the previous week, bounces back, 240 yards, three touchdowns this past week. Really solid game for Fromm. Obviously, we will continue to watch that situation closely, you know, with Justin Fields waiting in the wings as well. So let's transition to the third segment of the night, and that is the tale of the tape as we take a look ahead to week 10 of the college football season. A lot of really good matchups to talk about here. First one I want to make note of, Texas A&M and Auburn. The two guys I want to watch closely in that one, Travion Williams for Texas A&M has been a disappointment this year. I thought we were going to see him kind of emerge and be a breakthrough star this year. Just haven't seen it. And then on Auburn side, Jared Stidham. Every single game the rest of the year for Jared Stidham is big because he would have to play really well down the stretch for him to, I think, declare for the draft this year and still be a guy who people are looking at as a top 50 pick. You know, I think his stock is probably fallen more than any other player this college football season. I think many people thought he had a legitimate chance, myself included, to be a top 10, top 15 pick in the 2019 NFL draft, but we just have not seen that level of production or that level of play this year, which is very concerning. Another game that's going to be fun to watch is South Carolina Ole Miss. It's the wide receiver game. If you like wide receivers, if you want to evaluate wide receivers for the 2019 NFL draft, watch this game. You got three of them. You would have had four if DK Metcalf didn't get hurt. But on Ole Miss, you got AJ Brown, one of the top wide receivers in the country. I already said Juju Smith-like player. On the South Carolina side, you got two other guys who are in my top six, Deebo Samuel and Bryan Edwards. Deebo Samuel, I think, very similar in play to DJ Moore, who we're starting to see emerge in the NFL as well. Bryan Edwards, I don't know if he's going to declare, but I still believe in this talent. You know, I see glimpses of AJ Green in terms of ball skills, ability to get vertical down the field. He's still got to, you know, become better all around route runner and stuff like that. But Edwards is a guy who squarely, you know, a guy who I think is a top 5 to 7 wide receiver in this draft class. I think all of those guys, AJ Brown, Deebo, Bryan Edwards, I think they're all, you know, top 60 players, guys who should go in the first two rounds of an NFL draft. Maybe Brown or someone sneaks into round one. But I think overall, a lot of the wide receivers are going to be late round one through round two picks in terms of the top wide receivers that declare. Another game, Nebraska, Ohio State, has Ohio State bounce back after their first loss. Obviously, you know, it should be a big, big game for Dwayne Haskins, J.K. Dobbins, K.J. Scott, Paris Campbell, all of them. I'm actually most intrigued on the other side and seeing my guy Stanley Morgan in this environment. Obviously, this past week, you know, played against a low-level competition, but now he steps up against Ohio State. He's looked really good the last 2 weeks. How does he perform this week in this environment? Probably Nebraska, you know, down big most of the game, a lot of pass attempts. I want to see how Morgan looks against that Ohio State defense. West Virginia, Texas has some fun matchups. You got it. Eyes on Will Grier and David Sills for West Virginia. On the other side, two wide receivers for Texas, Colin Johnson and little Jordan Humphrey. Going to be fun to kind of see those guys. Should be a high-scoring game. So I think Sills, Johnson, Jordan Humphrey, all going to have a lot of opportunities to make big plays. Really going to hone in here. We know Texas has got a good defense. Really going to hone in on Will Grier on this one. How does he look? Is he a little bit more careful with the ball? Not so reckless. I think that's something he really needs to clean up and try to draw the fine line between, you know, being aggressive and making plays, but not being too aggressive and making too many mistakes, especially turnovers that flip field and change the entire outcome of the game. Couple other games on this monster week of football. We have Georgia, Kentucky. Kentucky's now in the top 10. My eyes will be on the running backs across the board, DeAndre Swift, Elijah Holyfield, and then Benny Snell. I think he's more of a two-down physical in-between-the-tackles type player. Some are a little bit higher on Snell. It'd be interesting to see if Snell can get going at all against this really strong Georgia defense. Also, Riley Ridley, one of my favorite wide receiver prospects in the country. You know, how does he look in this game as well? And then Isaac Nauta, a guy I've already talked about today as well. Fun to see him. Penn State and Michigan, Miles Sanders, Juwan Johnson. I know Matt really high on Juwan Johnson. He's a guy who hasn't really emerged as I thought, because while I wasn't as high as Matt on Juwan Johnson in the summer, I did think he was going to be a breakout star this year at Penn State. I thought he was going to be Trace McSorley's main two guy. We've only seen one touchdown on the year. We haven't seen any 100-yard games. You know, so Johnson's going to be a guy who kind of want to follow closely down the stretch here and see if he starts resembling the player that we thought he was going to be when we watched him on film in the summer. Miles Sanders, again, we talked about him last week, Pete and I on the show. Top five running back prospect if he comes out. I mean, I think he's shown enough this year, and the lack of players at the running back position. I think Sanders is squarely going to be in the mix with the David Montgomerys, the Damien Harris, those type of players. Anderson, if you know, coming off of the injury, I think Sanders right in the mix with those guys in the top five at the running back position. On Michigan side, Shea Patterson, Donovan Peoples-Jones will be the guys I'll be watching closely. And then the biggest game of the year, Alabama, LSU, number one versus number three. Basically, the prospects in terms of individual prospects that I'll be watching are four Alabama guys. You know, obviously, Tua, how does he perform in his biggest test of the year? If he goes out and performs as well as I think he does, because I think Alabama is going to roll in this game by double digits. If that happens, Tua may solidify the Heisman Trophy Saturday night with a big performance against LSU. Running back, Damien Harris. Again, obviously always a timeshare there. Can Harris get anything going against that great LSU defense? And then the pass catchers. I've been talking about them most of the year. Jerry Jeudy, Irv Smith Jr. How does Jeudy look in this environment, this setting, going up against probably a lot of Greedy Williams? And then Irv Smith Jr., can he get anything going against the safeties and the linebackers of LSU? Really excited for this game. It is must-watch TV on Saturday night there between Alabama and LSU. Let's transition to the final segment of the night, and that is the NFL Rookie Report. Busy week in week eight, a lot of rookies to discuss and talk about. Let's talk at the quarterback position where we usually start. Baker Mayfield has not looked all that impressive since he came in and looked good against the Jets game. I've been waiting to see. He had a couple tough matchups, but the matchups have kind of turned the other way. And I thought he was going to look impressive over the last couple of weeks. He really hasn't. No reason to be alarmed by it. If anything, a reason to maybe see if the owner is a little bit down and you can buy low on him. I doubt it, especially with the coaching change now. That should speak volumes. You know, that obviously they're going to look to get somebody for next season who creates an offense that caters to Baker much more, you know, up tempo, maximizes his skill set, a lot more creativity than what Hugh Jackson there was doing and Todd Haley. So Baker's a guy who, while he hasn't looked as good as I thought he would, I still not worried. I'm not panicked. I'll hold him. I'll go buy for him if the price is right. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he finishes out this year. Josh Rosen, really impressive comeback against the 49ers the other day. You know, the OC change could spark him a little bit down the stretch, you know, as they maximize and utilize the skill set more of David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald. Him and Christian Kirk continue to show a nice chemistry there with the game winner the other day. I think stock up on Rosen once they get an O-line there, once they get another playmaker or so. I think Rosen, you know, will continue to rise and move up the boards as a quality starting quarterback, and then eventually emerge himself into fantasy viable as well, even in one quarterback leagues. Sam Darnold struggled this past week, not surprising against the defense that he was facing. Again, no reason to panic. I thought Darnold needed a half a year to a year anyway to sit. He kind of got put in there, taking his lumps now. Again, anytime these guys struggle, I am not going to jump off the bandwagon this quickly. I use it as an opportunity to try to buy low on these guys. At the running back position, listen, I'm not going to talk about Saquon Barkley every week. He's a superstar. Even in a bad week, he gets 100 yards. Like, you know, that's just what he does. You know, he's going to do that every single week, pretty much all the time. And then he's going to have his blow up weeks as well. You know, very, very, you know, high floor and ridiculously high ceiling every single week for Saquon Barkley. Kerryon Johnson, Nick Chubb, and Philip Lindsay, all stock up. Kerryon Johnson, while he didn't have an explosive game like he had the previous week, I like the usage in the receiving game. Now, I know Theo Riddick was out, but you're starting to see that Kerryon Johnson could be a big, big impact in the receiving game. What that tells me is that in time, you have a guy who can play on all three downs. That doesn't mean he's going to be a 24-touch workhorse. You know, that's very few guys are that anymore. But what it shows me is he's going to be a guy that between 16 and 19 touches a week, going to make an impact. He's going to be able to catch the ball and, you know, be effective out of the passing game. It raises his floor a little bit, and I think that's really important in fantasy football to have these running backs that you know can rely on to at least be an effective player in the passing game as well. Nick Chubb, obviously, with the Carlos Hyde trade, stock up on him. We talked about that previously, but Chubb is a guy who, again, some concerns that he's not more involved in the passing game, but he is a guy who I do think is going to be a heavy workload guy. I think he'll be okay for a couple dump offs here or there. I think he's very much in the Jordan Howard mold, and we've seen Jordan Howard be a running back one. We've seen him be a running back two as Cleveland's offense gets better, maybe with the change this year, but more likely next year. I think you're going to see Chubb produce some big games. He's got a couple great matchups on the docket sooner rather than later that I think you're going to see Chubb's stock even rise higher when he goes for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns, I think, in one of these games. Philip Lindsay handled a heavier workload this week with Royce Freeman out. Really impressive game by Philip Lindsay. Continues to be utilized in the passing game a little bit as well. Stock up for him. Another guy, I don't think he's ever going to lose control of that backfield, to be honest with you. Maybe eventually Royce Freeman works his way into some type of more even committee than what we've seen. But Lindsay has been getting a heavier touch share pretty consistently the entire year. Don't really see that changing. Stock down, Royce Freeman, for reasons I just said, more because of the emergence of Philip Lindsay. Rashard Penny didn't even play a snap this week. You know, I don't, you know, at some point he's going to get an opportunity as a first round pick, but, you know, man, it sure seems like Seattle wasted that first round pick. You know, then obviously, you know, fantasy owners invested in him because of that high, you know, draft capital, but he has not impressed, you know, since the summer. Basically, I had concerns about Penny. I thought he was much more of a third round pick than a first round pick, you know, but I still thought he was going to be a solid player. But I think his stock went way too high after he was a first-round investment. In terms of the pass catchers, tight end, I'll start there. Chris Herndon still continues to be a guy Sam Darnold looks for when Herndon's on the field. You know, he's a guy I think you could still buy relatively low. All the other tight ends, I still think you can buy cheap on them. Gesicki, Goddard, you know, Hayden Hurst, they're all not really performing. Goddard, it's more because of lack of playing time. When he plays, we see production. Gesicki still kind of in a timeshare with a bunch of guys there in Miami, and Hurst in a timeshare with like four or five other tight ends in Baltimore. But if you like those guys, you can go out and buy them on the cheap right now. At the wide receiver position, I said last week, stock up, go get him now, Cortland Sutton. Yesterday, the Broncos traded Demaryius Thomas. We're about to see Cortland Sutton play 90% of the snaps, and then he's going to emerge into their number one wide receiver. I don't even know if Emmanuel Sanders is going to be there next year. So it might be Cortland Sutton. And then a cheap guy that I'd go buy low right now is Deshaun Hamilton. I think Deshaun Hamilton is a great buy low because I'm not sure Emmanuel Sanders is going to be on the team next year. And even if he is, I think Deshaun Hamilton may have a bigger role next year. I think Hamilton's best position is in the slot. So if Sanders does move on next year, they'll probably get another outside wide receiver. But I like Hamilton from inside the slot. I think Hamilton and Sutton are their futures main two wide receivers. You can buy Hamilton really cheap right now. Sutton is probably going to cost you a ton. But if it costs me a first round pick, I'd go get him. Give me Cortland Sutton. And that role that he now has, probably over any wide receiver coming out in this draft class. Maybe I'll rank higher a couple guys. But in terms of the landing spot, the fit, and what we've already seen at the NFL level, I'd be willing to deal my first round rookie pick next year for Cortland Sutton. Maybe if I thought it was going to be top two or top three, I wouldn't, because that holds so much trade capital that then you can trade it. But if you think you're a middle of the road team or a contender, I would offer my first round pick for Cortland Sutton. DJ Moore stock up. Really, he's starting to become more and more involved in that Carolina passing offense. I think that'll just continue. I don't think all of a sudden he's going to take a step back. I think he's a guy who right now still can maybe buy slightly less than maybe what his draft capital costs, but I think that window is slowly closing. I mean, fastly closing. And, you know, within one more good week, you might not even have that window. Tre'Quan Smith, use this opportunity for a couple down games to see if you can go get him for a second round rookie pick. I think he's a guy, you know, really impressive player, his ball skills, his ability to get vertical, win at multiple levels of the field. I think he's going to be the long-term starter there with Michael Thomas. And since Michael Thomas goes inside so often, Tre'Quan Smith is going to be one of their, you know, preeminent players on the outside, you know, taking vertical shots down the field. Christian Kirk already talked about, great buy to go get him now or just hold on to him. The chemistry he's building with Josh Rosen is only going to continue. Kiki Kuti, with the Will Fuller injury, is going to get an opportunity to be more involved in the offense at Houston for the rest of the year and see more target share. But they did go out and trade for Demaryius Thomas yesterday, so that might slowly, you know, once Thomas gets acclimated to the offense and the scheme, Kuti might see a little bit less target share now with Thomas there. And then a couple guys, I already said buy low on Deshaun Hamilton. I'll continue to say buy low on Anthony Miller and James Washington. Use the fact they're not being involved much to see if you can go get those guys for, you know, mid-second round rookie picks or late second round rookie picks, if that's where you think you're going to be picking in the draft. So there it is, the NFL Rookie Report for week number 8. Guys, hopefully you enjoyed the segments tonight. I know I was really excited to talk about a lot of things this week that happened, from the college game to the pro game to taking a look ahead. Such a great weekend of college football. Really looking forward to watching it all this weekend and then being back next week and breaking it down with all of you guys. Thank you for the continued support you continue to show for the show. Remember, the Saturday Sunday premium notebooks can be purchased over at the website for $9.99. You get all 4 notebooks. It is the best way to support the show. You get the scouting notebook, the rankings notebook, which has all our different types of rankings. And then in February, March, you get the freshman notebook, and then you get the NFL draft projections notebook in April. If you can't purchase the 4 notebooks, then please at least get over to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe. All those things greatly help us as well as we continue to try to, you know, get our name out there and reach a wider audience. All that stuff helps. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And I look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.